Good morning, everybody. It is a good morning. I'm glad to be with you people. I like being with us. I have noticed this morning there's a lot of faces in our group, in our congregation, that are new to me faces. So I should just, you know, reiterate a couple of things. I want to make sure that we're clear. I'm not the regular guy. I prefer to think of myself as the other guy. Darren and his family are in Arkansas this week. They're on a couple of weeks of vacation. Obviously, they're down there to take Makaira and all her things to school and get her settled in for her freshman year at Harding. So I'm preaching for us this morning. And then next week, I want to reiterate what Devin said. Next week is our Camp Dakota campout. There will be worship here next Sunday at 10:30 for folks that don't go to Camp Dakota. And Roger Elliott is going to preach for the folks who are here. And I think that'll be really good too. So whether you go to camp with the majority of us, or you're here in Kaiser next Sunday, either way, we'll worship together, just geographically separated a little bit. Then one other announcement before we read and start really reflecting on the end of James's letter. Back in the spring, one Sunday morning that I preached, I had our small children pass out little cards that invited the congregation to pray. You might remember that. It's a little card that says an invitation to pray, and I asked the congregation to start praying about, about our the college-age folks in our congregation and kind of the opportunity and responsibility that we need to start thinking about as a congregation about how to work with or serve those people. And I know a lot of you have been praying about that, and I know there's been a lot of conversation amongst elders, deacons, Darren and myself and others about how to respond to a need that we see. So the people have been working on that. And I guess I'm going to kind of advertise. At the end of the month, on Sunday, August 30th, we have a family meeting. And there'll be lots of things that Sunday evening that we need to discuss. But that'll be one thing that we need to discuss as a congregation, as I think we're getting to a point where we can have a discussion about exactly what we can do to serve college-age folks in our midst as a congregation, but also in our community. So, if you would, please turn whatever type of Bible you have, whether it's paper or electronic, to James chapter 5. We're going to spend our time this morning at the end of James's letter. We've been on a little journey through the summer, a journey through James, and it's been really good. Even back when I was a college age fellow myself, I always enjoyed James. I have a lot of good early memories of James. I remember one time convincing my roommate, my freshman year, it would be a good idea for us to have just one-on-one, mano-a-mano Bible study. And we started studying James, and we would get up at 7 o'clock in the morning on Tuesdays to do that. And that didn't last that long because we were freshmen in college. But it was a good start. What I hope to do today is to try to conclude this journey or this trip through James and try to tie a few things together. So let's start that by reading James 5, 19 through 20. He wrote, "My brothers and sisters, if any one among you wanders from the truth and is brought back by another, you should know that whoever brings back a sinner from wandering will save the sinner's soul from death and will cover over a multitude of sins." Let me start with just kind of a couple of thoughts that I've had over and over again during the summer as we've been studying James. You know, James is I'm going to call him, he's a plain dealer. You know, he's one of the things that is admirable about James is he just teaches, and he's very forthright, very upfront with the congregations that he's addressing, the believers that he's addressing. This is how we ought to be. This is how we shouldn't be. And I've thought about that. There's a part of that that appeals to me. I can be that way myself. But you know, in some ways, it's great to have James on paper. Because I don't know if you've had situations in your life or if you have that person in your life who is just a plain dealer like that, but it can be awfully tough to have that kind of a person. And one of the things that's great about James is he's like that, but you can kind of keep him at arm's length. And at the same time, that's a little bit of trouble, because our tendency, of course, is to keep him at arm's length. And I've been thinking, what is it that I'm hearing in James? What's that voice? And that's what I began to realize. You know, as you just look at James's sermon here, you see all the things that he talks about and the way that he addresses them. And it just occurred to me, so much of what James says sounds an awful lot like the way that Jesus talks. So I was thinking, you know, if you, even just in your own personal Bible study time, this is a fascinating thing to do. If you sat down with a notebook in your copy of the Bible and you go through James, at the same time that you're doing that, you go back to the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapters 5 through 7, or you start thinking and reading through all the parables of Jesus, or you think about, the Sermon on the Plain in Luke chapter 6. If you start lining those two things up, you know, the teaching of Jesus and then the Sermon of James, it doesn't really take you very long to realize, man, it sounds like I'm reading the same thing twice at places. So this is really what started to come to my mind is, here's James, who was Jesus' actual physical brother. And it's interesting in the length of his letter, you know, he never says anything about that, right? Very, very humble or very modest about that. But you do really hear that family voice. And I think we hear that because that voice, Jesus' voice, is really the one that shaped James. I was thinking about in the process of what's called canonization, the process that the early church went through, sorting out all of the literature that they had in the first few centuries of the church's life and weighing those out and figuring out which letters, sermons, gospels do we have that really represent the Christian faith and what are ones that are not so representative, which ones should we hold on to and think of or realize that they communicate an authoritative message about the Christian gospel. You know, the discussion about James was lengthy. And it was back and forth about, does James really represent what Christian faithfulness is about? But I think, you know, the thing that really, that was really convincing is what I've been picking up on, that James is clearly shaped by the teaching of Jesus, and that in turn he is turning around, and with these congregations he's writing to in the dispersion, he's trying to shape them the same way. So I think that just at the outset raises an important question for us to think about: what is it that's really shaping us? Do we find ourselves, when you read James, or you reflect back and you start to work into the teaching of Jesus, and you start to reflect on your own thinking and values and behavior, is that really the voice that's shaping us? Because it is true that we are shaped. We are shaped by whatever voice we give ear to. And I think James provides a great model of how to train our ear to the voice of truth, to the voice of Jesus himself. So, as we wrap up our study of James, I think that's a tremendously important thing to learn from him, is a model of how to be really good students of Jesus himself. And then we get to this ending. You know, and sometimes James gets criticized because his transitions from point to point is not so smooth. He comes across kind of herky-jerky. And being a fellow that has to preach a sermon, I sympathize with that. Transitions are always the difficult part. But we get to this business where he talks about people who wander and bringing back sinners and covering over sins and saving them from death. And I just thought, I think it's good for us to reflect on, what is James talking about here? What is that, and why is that at the end of the letter? So let me work through some of this. In James's mind, it's very clear there is a deep tie between Jesus and his church. That to think about who Jesus is and to think about Jesus' people really are to think about two things that overlap in a way that you can't take them apart. Jesus' church are those people, and James was included in this, that have heard the call of Jesus and have decided to obey it and to conform their lives to it. And to think on or reflect on Jesus necessarily then draws us into thinking on and reflecting about his church. When James tells these churches that he's writing to, if someone wanders from the truth and is brought back by another, the picture that he has in his mind is a person who has been a Christian person, a disciple of Jesus, and has wandered off from that. It is a person in the first century who's no longer practicing the Christian faith. And it is a practice. You do have to work at it. He doesn't have in mind someone that just has changed philosophical persuasions or positions. What he's talking about is people who've been disciples of Jesus and have stopped following Jesus and are no longer tied to the church. It's the same kind of language that you hear later in Hebrews, when the writer of Hebrews admonishes those listeners not to forsake assembling with one another and encouraging one another to love and good deeds. It's a picture of someone who's just out there back in the world, that they've wandered off, that they've wandered away. And in James's thinking, and this is the biblical perspective, to be outside of the people of God means to also be outside of the grace and love and truth and forgiveness of God. One is still reachable, but one is really not in fellowship with God. You see that in 1 John as well. To be outside of God's people is to be outside of the truth, is the way that James describes it, and is to put oneself into the way of death, into darkness, into the wilderness. So I was trying to think, what's a good way to kind of think of this or to visualize it? You know, to think of Jesus and the church as not being two things and not being the same thing, but really to be two things that are mutually inclusive, that you can't have one and can't have the other. It occurred to me, you know those little bumper stickers or posters? I think we might have one around here somewhere that says, you know, it says, no, N-O, as in nothing, no Jesus, no peace, and then it drops down, and then it changes to no Jesus, as in knowledge, K-N-O-W, right? No Jesus, no peace, right? Talks about that transition. That's how I was thinking about it, to think of no church and no Jesus, that they really do go together. That's not something that we've created, that's actually something that God has created. And then the flip side of that, or the bottom side of it, is that is to know the church is to come to know Jesus. It's not that Jesus is is simply contained within the church, but you just can't have him and not have the church. And that's really where James is coming from. They are mutually inclusive. So it's with that that James is then admonishing these churches in the first century to think about the people that they know that have been disciples that have wandered off, and then to call these people back. And you can't read that language, I think, and not think about the parables of Jesus. Right? The first thing that I thought of was the parable of the soils. The sower seeds all, or sows all these seeds on the soils. Say that five times fast. Okay, it's not going to work. He's sowing all this seed, and you know, some of course is rejected and immediately eaten by the birds, but there is soil that lands in the rocks and it springs up and it's good for a little while, but then it croaks off because there's not enough moisture. There's also soil that, or seeds that fall in pretty good soil, but it grows up with weeds and the weeds choke it out. And I think that's what's in James's mind, that there are people who are disciples, but they don't last very long. Right? Or there's disciples and they cultivate a bunch of other stuff in their life that starts to choke them off. Or the reading that Roger did for us this morning. And Roger, I really appreciate your prayer as well. It's very good. Is, you know, that parable about the one sheep that gets lost. There's always that one sheep, that one guy that wanders off. I think that's clearly in James's mind when he tells these Christian believers, you need to reach out to, you need to try to rescue those people. You know, in James's mind, because of how he's learned from Jesus, there's no such thing as, well, let me put it this way. You know that saying about all those who wander are not lost, right? Right? That's not James's perspective at all. When he talks, when he writes here about those who have wandered off, that's exactly who he's talking about. It's the people who wander off from the church, wander off from Jesus, and they do become lost. And James is admonishing us to reach out to those people. Now let me just take a brief aside. We live in a little bit different set of circumstances. James is not talking about folks that have left one church and gone to another church. You know, in the first century, it was really not an option. First century Palestine, let alone as you moved, as the gospel moved out into the rest of the Greco-Roman world. You know, you didn't leave the church of Jesus Christ or leave the church of God, all the various ways it's described in the New Testament, and go down the street to the next congregation. Because there wasn't a next congregation. Right? It was just that congregation, that group of house churches. So that's not what James is talking about. Obviously, that's a little development that's come from, 1,000 years or so of Protestantism, and that's a whole different problem. And interestingly, those sorts of moves and leaves rarely have much of anything to do with Jesus, his teaching, or the gospel. What James is talking about is people that have just wandered back into the world, that they are sheep who are lost. And he admonishes us to bring those people back, to reach out to them. And I've been thinking about that a lot. That is just not all it's cracked up to be. I was thinking to myself, what about those times, you know, in my life, or in the lives of people I know that I'm close with, that have been those people, that have wandered off, that have put ourselves in a position of lostness? You know, it's an interesting thing about a sheep that goes astray. It may not really want to come back. Right? The romantic picture is, you know, you have one sheep that gets separated from the hundred, and then, you know, the shepherd goes and, you know, leaves the 99 and brings back, and it's all great. And the sheep is so happy to be rescued and be back with all of its little sheeple. You know, it sounds great on paper. Right? But, I mean, I've known some lost sheep. I've been one myself. You know, the sheep just don't really always want to come back to the rest of the flock or back to the pen. You know, the sheep may not be all that excited to see the shepherd or the sheepdog or whoever it is that's showing up to rescue them. So if you've been that in that position, if you've been that person, or maybe you're that person now, I just want you to think about how difficult it is, you know, to come back, right? Because it's hard. When you consider what life in the world apart from Jesus and his church produces, it's difficult. And you think about, you know, what happens in a person's life separated from Jesus, the rebellion, the pride, the arrogance, the fear of judgment in returning, anger, guilt, shame, embarrassment, humiliation. There's all these things that separation from Jesus piles up in our lives that correspondingly make it very difficult to return to Jesus and to his people. And also, as someone calling out to that lost person, calling out to that wanderer, it makes it very difficult to bring that person back, right? Because the simple facts are is that sin just causes trouble. It's scarring. It causes damage. You don't just live without Jesus and live without side effects. There's all kinds of personal embarrassment and humiliation and guilt, and there's broken relationships. And especially as we think about coming back to the church, there's fear about how you're going to be received. What are people going to think about you? What are they going to say about you? What are they going to say to you? What are they not going to say to you? There's always a mess to clean up. And I always think about, maybe James was thinking about this too, about the next parable in Luke, which is the parable of the prodigal son or the forgiving father. You know, the father, of course, is thrilled to see his youngest son come back. But it sure seems like in that parable, he's the only one. So when the son comes back, he doesn't just come back to a zero-sum game. He doesn't come back to a clean slate, right? And you think in that parable how difficult it was for him to get to that point, to even return, that he was coming back to a really big, just a, in his life, a really big mess to clean up. So with all that said, you know, seeking the wandering, the disciple that's wandered off, the disciple that has gone prodigal, it's difficult. But it's still a call that James puts to us. So let me have you think of it this way. I think we need to think of ourselves as a church. We need to think about ourselves as disciples becoming a church. That for people who are with us, that we become a group that's hard to leave. And at the same time, it's hard to leave, and at the same time, easy to come back to. I think, of course, a lot of our history in our churches and has been being the opposite, right? That it's easy to leave. It's easy to leave and hard, hard to come back to. But as James is pointing out, that's not the way of Jesus. But I think Jesus' call is always very difficult. It's difficult to be that kind of a congregation that's hard to leave and easy to come back to. But to do that, I think we have to become a church that's very diligent, very purposeful, and very disciplined about holding on to one another. We have to think of ourselves, like James is saying here, as a group of Jesus' disciples, as a church, as a family, as all of us together. And that what we want to do is hold on to people, that we want to make it because of our ties with one another and our ties in Jesus' love, that we want to make it difficult for people to turn away from this fellowship. So let me suggest some specific things for us to think about and work on. And we can do this as a church, and we can do this as individual disciples in terms of how can we obey this call that James has given us. I'm going to start with number one, what I'm going to call self-rescue. You know, you don't, if you're a person that's on the brink or you have been out there without the church, you know, you don't have to wait for someone to come get you. If you want to carry out the parable of the sheep, it would be okay if the one sheep just came home. That would be all right, right? It is not a prerequisite that as one who has stopped practicing the Christian faith or has abandoned the church, you don't have to wait for someone to come and drag you back in by the nape of the neck, or shove you in, or however it is, right? We can, we're allowed, we're encouraged by God's grace to just repent. That's the great word in Scripture, is that we can turn our life back toward God. So if you find yourself in that situation, or if you can remember being in that situation, or if you anticipate being in that situation, remember that. You can just return to the Lord, and it's good. Then I was also thinking we need to, as a congregation, as individual disciples, we have to keep a clear identity with Jesus. That That's what we're really bringing to or offering to other people, to folks who have been disciples and have given up, or who have fallen by the wayside, or have cultivated other things in their life that have distracted them. We need to be clear on who we are and who we are calling them back to being. We don't do any good by just joining people in their lostness. Right? That's Jesus' teaching too. You think about a city on a hill, a light to the world. That part of what the church does for one another and for the culture at large is to offer a different picture, a different vision, a different reality that we call people to and that we call lost disciples back to. So it's not, we can't allow ourselves to just partner with people in their lostness. We need to have relationships where we stay clear on who we are and we call them back. And then for the people that we know who have strayed, and I want us to think about, that's a wide group of people, right? I mean, we can think about folks who have been part of our congregation in years past and have just given up the Christian faith. We can think about family, friends, for some of us, our children. It's a wide range of people. We need to pray for those people. You know, this section here about... about bringing back the wanderer comes right after really strong words on James's part about prayer. And I don't think that's an accident. Those need to be people that we pray for and that we make an effort to stay in touch with. And of course, we're limited by what people will allow, right? But we can do what we can do. We need to stay in touch with them. We need to do what we can to stay involved in their lives and look for opportunities to invite them back. And then last, we need as a congregation to be hospitable. And I'm going to say more about this in days to come, I'm sure. But that does not just mean being warm and friendly on Sunday morning when we meet new people. It includes that, but that's like hospitality 101. Or let's back up. That's even like hospitality 0.25. It's a prereq before you really get into the good stuff, right? We need to be a congregation in families, in that congregation, that deliberately welcome people into our life. And one of the things that is just so unique about the church is it is the only group, because it's made by God, that is deliberately inclusive of everybody, right? Anybody can be involved in the church. Anybody can become a Christian person. It has very clear boundaries, and at the same time, it welcomes anybody. It's not a fraternity, it's not a sorority, it's not a country club. Anybody can be a part of the church. And we have to behave like that. What I'm saying is we have to be a church that is thoughtful, deliberate about bringing people into our lives. That starts with just basic friendliness, but it's got to be more diligent than that. We have to find ways to create relationship with people. And the more that we knit ourselves together with one another in Jesus' love, the more it becomes difficult to give that up. And I'll end with this. That was exactly what the notion was, or the basis, or the presupposition, when Paul told the Corinthian church, you know, you have a member in the church that's carrying on a sexual relationship that is way inappropriate. As a matter of fact, this is in 1 Corinthians 5. He says, he's telling them, you know, it's so inappropriate, even the pagans think it's bad. If the pagan world thinks it's bad, it's pretty bad. Right? And what he says is, the way that you correct that is by putting that man outside of the fellowship. And what it forced him to do in the first century was to weigh what was really important. This relationship he was carrying on with this woman, or his relationships with all these other people. Well, obviously, I mean, you can tell that course of behavior or that action worked, because the man did repent, and there's news of that in the 2 Corinthian letter. But that only works if the church is really close. If he was put out and he really wasn't close to those people, didn't care about them, rely on them, he'd have just been out of there, right? The only way that we we have something to call people back to, something to welcome people into, is by being serious, consistent, deliberate, purposeful about really tying ourselves to one another. And that is exactly what we learn from Jesus. And I'll end with that. When you think about James and you think about what he's calling us to, we should be seeing exactly Jesus' own behavior in that. And I'll just have you think about, how hard was it, night of the Last Supper, and we're about to share in the Lord's Supper together. And the scripture doesn't really address this, but I just want us to think. You know, I wonder how hard it was for Judas to... how hard was it for Judas to leave that supper and do what he did? I think for Judas it was very difficult, right? And I think that's very clear later, as you know, later on Judas weighs the regret and the remorse of that. But what made that hard was his connection. His connection with Jesus and with Jesus' disciples. And I think we need to be that connected so that we can call others back. We're going to sing, and that will be a relief for me. If you have a need, come forward and let us know. We'll pray for you and try to meet it.